So, Caitlin, what's endgame?
I think I just really want to be, or I want to continue to be an inspiration for others in my community. Like I always say, yeah, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a director, but I think most importantly, I am a storyteller. And from stories, no matter what it is, I feel like we all find inspiration from something. And so it's just like, for me, I just want to continue being an inspirational storyteller, you know, for people back at home, for people across the world, you know, people who I don't even know, you know. So I just want to continue being that for people, because I feel like there was a time where I didn't really have that, you know, growing up or watching TV. So, that's really what I want to be when I grow up.
Welcome to Josiah's Voice. This podcast connects you with both new storytellers and seasoned pros in Black cinema. Plus, I share my own creative journey along the way. Here's to elevating the culture. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Josiah. Welcome back to another exciting episode. Today, I've got a new internet friend. She's a current film student out of Florida. She'll get into more details, more hometown rep in just a minute. But we're here to talk about writing, directing, some of my favorite topics. And I just want you guys to help me welcome Caitlin Kelly. Caitlin, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be a guest on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Let's go ahead and dive right in. Can you share with the people a little bit more about yourself? Like, what's your hometown? And what are some of your favorite TV shows and maybe movies growing up?
So I am currently a film student at Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida. I was born and raised in Albany, Georgia, also known as 229, the Good Life City, a little small town, you know, south of Georgia. As far as like some of my favorite TV shows and movies growing up, this is actually like a hard question for me, because I've gone through many different phases, like growing up. Like, I was like a Disney kid, and then like I got into like BET. So like I was like a really huge fan of the Bernie Mac Show, 101, the Parkers, and then also kind of like younger me, younger Caitlin was into like That's So Raven or like Hannah Montana. Then as far as like some of my favorite films growing up, this is actually still one of my favorite films. I remember seeing it when I had just turned like 13, but Poetic Justice, John Singleton's Poetic Justice. And that has been, I love that movie so much that I just want to be the movie, if that makes sense. But yeah, so I think that those are like some of my favorite TV shows or films. Oh, I love White Chicks growing up. Really just like a kind of like one of my favorite comfort movies, that and Poetic Justice. I think that's really all that I can kind of like think of.
I think I saw Poetic Justice late. I saw it maybe 2 years ago, actually.
Oh, wow.
For the first time in California, though, so that's cool. About 2019 is when I moved to California, when I lived there. And I was just, I didn't want to become the movie, but I really liked it. I just loved this, the road trip aspect, just seeing, you know, them going from, where did they go? South Central to Oakland? Was that what it was?
Yeah, to Oakland, yeah.
Yeah, and just seeing, you know, 90s, you know, Janet with Tupac and Regina,
right.
And just,
right.
them just living their lives, bonding over music, fighting at barbecues. Like, didn't they crash that family
Right.
reunion?
Oh yeah, they crashed the family reunion. My favorite part is when Regina King's character and like the boyfriend, like they get into that fight and she was like, yeah, go ahead and brush that fade. And she threw the brush like out in like the middle of nowhere. But no, that I love that movie. I
Gosh,
love that movie.
he chucked my man's hairbrush. I was like,
I
no.
swear.
And also shout out to our mutual buddy, Miss Cleo Trapa,
Cleo Trapa.
also known as Jasmine Johnson of Black Filmmaker, because
Shout out.
recently you had a really good time hanging out with her, what, a couple weeks ago, I think. Y'all working on something, I guess that's secret right now, but from the little bit y'all shared.
I don't want to say nothing about it right now, but yeah, we definitely had a good time. And it was actually my first time working with her.
How was
So
that?
it was good. It was really good. I had first met Jazz out in LA when I visited in December, like kind of like
Nice.
how you and I, like we had become like internet buddies, and I found out she was from Tallahassee, and I was just like, oh snap. I was like, this black filmmaker. I was like, yo, I was like, is she from the South? So I knew that like I had to link up with her when I was out in LA visiting. So yeah, but when we first met for the first time, it was like I felt like I had known her for such a long time, and we talked about like a lot of movies and Spike Lee and John Singleton, like our John Singleton favorites and Spike Lee favorites. And so it was just a good time. So recently, like about 2 weeks ago, that's when she had hit me up about like this project, and I was like, oh okay, yeah, you know what, girl, I'm in there, I'm in there. So
Yes.
it was so good to man, she's just so amazing. Like she's just so phenomenal, and I can't wait to see, like where she goes,
Yes.
and what else she accomplishes, because she's phenomenal.
She really
She is
is. Just
really, truly.
we just want to give you your flowers, Jazz. Another friend of the podcast. Can't wait to have you back on as well. I worked with her. If you've heard previous episodes, I worked with her on Insecure, and she welcomed me onto her Insecure podcast, securing the bag after we'd wrapped, and it's always a joy. So I'm so glad that you got that opportunity. First to meet her when you went to December, then to link up with her again early April. That's great. Like two Southern black chicks. I know the anoint the film the cinematic anointing had to have been heavy.
Yes,
Goodness.
for
So
sure.
I can't wait. By the time whatever y'all release it should be out by the time this episode comes out. So just saying it here now, in the past, in the future, congratulations. I can't wait to see whatever it was, and I'm sure it was a blessing of a collaboration. I hope you guys get to do it again soon.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So Caitlin, what's end game for you? What do you want to be when you grow up?
Ah, what do I want to be when I grow up? I think I just really want to be, or I want to continue to be an inspiration for others in my community. Like I always say, yeah, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a director, but I think most importantly, I am a storyteller. And from stories, no matter what it is, I feel like people find We all find inspiration from something. And so it's just like for me, I just want to continue being an inspirational storyteller, for people back at home, for people across the world, people who I don't even know, So I just want to continue being that for people, because I feel like there was a time where I didn't really have that, growing up or watching TV. So yeah, that's really what I want to be when I grow up, if I had to say.
I love how you said that for your hometown. How has your hometown, in fact, influenced you as a storyteller and filmmaker? Like, what's one standout way?
I feel like my hometown has a lot of culture, and sometimes, unfortunately, Albany gets like people have like this bad perception, this negative perception on Albany. Like there is a lot of crime in Albany, but there's also like a lot of good things, you know, that come from my city and a lot of good people that come from my city. And I think that growing up, like just being around like my family, I kind of had like a different outlook on people and different things. Just because like I just like for example, a lot of people in my family, they people who are still living and then people who have passed away, but they have had like some type of like disability. So like for example, like my deceased aunt, rest in peace,
Yes, rest in peace.
she was actually a double amputee, and she weighed over like 600 pounds. And some of like my storytelling that some that I haven't actually like gotten to make yet, but ones that I want to like stories that I want to tell in the future, it's just kind of like stories based, like not just representing like Black people, but like my village, you know what I mean? So like I
Yeah.
didn't, so I used to wonder all the time, like, well, I don't see nobody that looked like my auntie on TV, you know? And so like, unless it was like my 600-pound life, you know how people are about like my 600-pound life.
Right,
And
right.
so it's just like, you know, like my aunt was so kind, and I miss her so much, but she was so kind and she was so sweet and she was just so special. She had such a special soul. And I guess like, as far as like my storytelling, it's like, I want to tell stories, and with my aunt just being an example, I want to tell stories about people who don't get noticed like that, you know, like people's stories who aren't told like that. Now, although I am not a double amputee, I don't weigh over 600 pounds, that's still like, you know, like I was still impacted by that. So whether, you know, I make this, I tell the story, whether it's from her perspective or my perspective, it's a story that's being told. And that's something that I want to contribute to just filmmaking. And so again, like a lot of people in my family have diabetes. I don't see nothing on TV about Black people with diabetes, you know what I'm saying? Or like people with ADHD, or like for example, I have a god sister who actually has autism, and she's nonverbal. She's the same age as me. She's 23 years old. I don't see any stories. And that's why I feel like I want to be the one to tell those stories. Now, there, I do believe that people should, you know, be able to tell stories that they feel that they relate to. But sometimes I feel like with proper research and accuracy, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I have not lived I have not lived the life that they have lived. But with proper research and everything, with a team that kind of has a similar experience, I feel like that's possible. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Because I know that, you know, sometimes people are like, well, why are you telling a story about LGBTQ people and you straight? You know what I'm saying? So like, you know, things like that or whatever. So I will say just in short that my hometown and the people around me, and just my village, who have contributed to my upbringing, are definitely a part of, you know, why I have the perspective that I have on storytelling. So my storytelling is not just limited to those examples, like my aunt or my god sister or anything, but just in general, like any stories that you don't see, I'm trying to put it out there. I'm trying to tell those stories as authentically and as accurately as possible. So I think for me, it's just about perspective. Whether it's about my life or not, you know, I want to offer that type of perspective and that type of storytelling to the world. So, yeah, that's pretty much, I guess, like how much my hometown and just like the people around me have kind of influenced that.
That's awesome. What, if you don't mind, what was your aunt's name?
Her name was Beverly.
Beverly. Oh,
Yes, we called her Aunt BB, Auntie BB for short.
that's
So yeah,
wonderful.
and I really hate that. I wish she could see me now, because she would always say when I was younger, she would always be like, oh my gosh, you're going to Hollywood if I got to carry you on my back. Because like, I was just such a drama queen growing up.
Really?
That's all my family used to say. That's all my family used to say, like, oh my gosh, she's so dramatic or whatever. So yeah, God rest her soul. I love and miss her so much.
Yes. So rest in peace to Auntie Beverly. I also had a close family church friend also by the name of Beverly. She had she's gone on to glory now. She with the Lord now as well. So the Beverlys are twinning up there now. With my grandfather also, because you reminded me of him as far as like, you know, he didn't get to see, it's, if I heard you correctly, it sounds like your Aunt Beverly super hip and maybe even to your career path and maybe had even seen, has she seen like a couple of your stuff coming up maybe before you went to school just to see your expression?
No, she actually passed away when I was like 10 years old. Like maybe when I was 9. So like I only really have like those, like just the childhood memories. So she was saying this, like, I'll take you to Hollywood if I have to carry you on my back, when I was like 7. So that's something that's been in, like, that they've always said about me, kind of like in my family when I was like a little girl. So yeah, no. At that point, I wasn't even in middle school yet. So yeah.
Wow. Well, I know we just speak their names, Auntie Beverly, Miss Beverly, Grandpa, you know, I know we're making them proud. You're making your Auntie Beverly proud with everything that you're doing. And you know what? Let's deep dive into more of what you're doing and what she's looking down watching you do. Mm-hmm. I know that you are a writer director. I'm right about that, right?
Yes. I will say that I have recently found that I'm more of a director than a writer. But yes, I am. I am a writer director. I love directing more, though. More passionate about directing, though.
Nice. Okay. I hope you check. I think I sent you. You got to check out that book, Transitions by Pete Chapman.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, then that's for her. Like, I've been sending it to all my friends that I know are like want to be directors, like specifically. Yeah. Of course, you know, it touches on everything else, writing, production, etc.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like, okay, this is her book. This is written to her, basically. Mm-hmm. So director, before we jump into that, well, you know, no. I'll recap with that in a minute. When did you know you wanted to be a director? And when did you know maybe writing wasn't the thing? Kind of my words, molded how you need to, though. Because that's important. I think that's really good to know that.
Okay. I think... So I will say, so just to kind of clarify, I won't say that I'm not a writer, because I am. Great. I just feel, I put it this way. So me and one of my close friends, who's also a writer director, we were having a discussion about, I asked her, I said, do you think you're more of a writer than a director? And she was like, I'm more of a writer. And I was like, you know, I feel like I'm more of a director. And she was like, you know, I definitely agree, because for me, I feel like you can give me a scene to like direct. If you give me like 15 minutes with a scene from anything, I don't know whether I've seen it or I haven't seen it, and you give me these actors and I direct it and I workshop it, it's mind blowing. Like the things I can do and the emotions that I can evoke and pull out of these actors, whereas like if you give me 15 minutes to write a script, I wouldn't feel as proud of it. I would definitely feel prouder of myself as a director, like, dang, like I only have 15 minutes, like, you go, girl, you know. So but if I was like writing or something, I'd be like, dang, this is like trash, you know. Not trash, but it's like, you know, it's a rough draft or whatever. So I guess to answer your question about when I knew I wanted to direct, I've always known that I wanted to tell stories. I've always, like ever since like I was young, I never saw myself as like a doctor, like a nurse, or a scientist or whatever, but like I always wanted to be a storyteller. But I will say, like, in undergrad, that was, I was a communications major, so I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. So I was going to be on the news, like, oh, reporting live at 7 p.m., Caitlin Kelly or whatever. So, yeah. So
you got
so,
the alliteration but, for it, too.
Right. I used to hate my name, but I love it now. It's the alliteration for me. But yeah, so in undergrad, because I was a communications major, it was kind of just like, it wasn't really specific. Like, I chose that major because I knew I was interested in film, but like there wasn't a film major. So like, there was there were these prerequisites for the degree that like you had to take some type of production course. So you could either take like animation or like film production or digital media production or something like that. And so I chose to take a film production course in undergrad where I wrote and directed my first short film called Kyle's Keeper. And it's about a young man who's struggling. He's kind of like balancing his home life with his grandfather who has dementia, and also he's trying to like balance his school life and his academics and everything. But that was the first time that I ever directed, and I didn't know what I was doing. My school didn't have a lot of resources. I was the director, I was the writer, I was the editor, I was everything. I didn't even know what I didn't know like what I was doing, because we didn't really have those resources. And we weren't really kind of like taught how to do it. It was just kind of like, go make a movie. Good luck. So. And so I think that was like the first time that I really was like, I need more of this. Like, I want to pursue this as a career. I don't want to do journalism anymore. But as far as like getting more into graduate school, because I'm a film student here at Florida State now. I think that for me, the true moment when I really felt like, dang, this really what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, because I would like pop in to some of the acting classes here at Florida State, and so. I was really cool with the instructor. So like, he would just let me like sit in, and he would just give me these scenes to direct. Like, I wouldn't know nothing about them, you know? And I would just, he'd be like, here's your actors, go. I'm like, what?
He just throw you out there?
Just go ahead and do it, you know? So I was just so amazed with myself. And I was like, dang, like, I only have this one scene, or I have like this script, like, you know, and I don't know anything about these characters. And it's just like, I'm having to just kind of like really like analyze and just like go through it with a fine tooth comb, you know, and just really understand the story and who these characters are, and to try to make what's on page come to life in X amount of time. You know what I mean? So I was just so amazed with myself. Right. And I was like, this is it. I was like really, you know, surprised with myself. I was like, wow. Like, that's crazy, you know? So, and then I was also, because I was a teaching assistant for the acting course, the same one that he taught. It actually wasn't that class, but it was another class with the students below us. So the first year graduate students, because I'm a second year student right now, but the class that I was like popping in on, that was after that class was over. So that was like just with the acting students. But in addition, I was also going to another acting class taught by another one of our professors here. And I would go every Friday, and she let me sit in. And so the same thing, I workshop, she would give it to me like in advance, like, you know, the previous week or something. And, but, you know, on top of my other coursework and then writing my thesis film or whatever, I didn't really have a lot of time to do my research. So like, when I would come in there, she kind of like, I would try to do like a little something, you know, like read a summary or something. And mind you, these are movies that have already been made. So like, for example, okay. I directed I directed a scene from Hannah and Her Sisters. I've never seen that movie, never had even heard of it, what it was about. Hannah and Her Sisters. I forget the director's name, but I didn't know nothing about it. And I did like a summary on IM, BB or whatever it's called, the night before.
I am BB, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I always, I can't remember if it's like the B or the D or switched or whatever, but
that happens to me too.
I am BD or just, you know what, just I am. Just how about that? I am. but yeah, so yeah, but she so what she would do is she would give us that material, and then when we came in that Friday, we would have to direct those scenes. So we get a chance to rehearse with the actors, and then we would have to come in and we have to direct it. And actually like shoot it and everything. It's just like a little mini exercise, you know, in front of the whole class. And so again, I was just mind blown, you know, at what I was like, wow. And I even like I think I was just more fascinated with the process, like how I was like, cause usually like as a director, I like to give like little exercises to do, you know, I like to have like, have them do like maybe repetitions or like just other little exercises. And I actually came up with this, I'm almost afraid to say it because like it's just so genius. I'm afraid somebody might steal it, but you know, I'm gonna put it out there anyway. But
oh snap, we got an exclusive technique, y'all, listen up.
No, go ahead. So the scene was from Hannah and her sisters, and so it was about like this, from what I can tell from the scene, it was about like this this older sister, and she has like two other sisters, and like I don't know, like her sister or something was trying to like get with the husband, or like it was some crazy stuff going on, but basically it was kind of about like how older siblings are like kind of like the parents in a way, like the second parent. And so I'm an only child, so I don't know anything about this.
I know.
I
that movie
sure,
is my life.
I bet. But
I got you.
We weren't able to actually cast another female for the role. Well, not cast. I was just given these actors, truly. But we had like a guy come in who was like a replacement for the female character. And so we just decided to change the narrative that they were brother and sister. So I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Frozen. Oh yeah, so Frozen, I actually don't remember the actual storyline. That's a shame. But I know it's about two sisters. And I know that there's a scene where one sister is like sad that like I think they got into like some type of like argument or something, and the other sister is like outside of the door. It's like this infamous scene, and the other sister is on the other side of the door. She's like, do you want to build a snowman? Like she wants her to come outside. And so for this particular scene for Hannah and her sisters, I got the two actors, and I was just trying to like, I was more like, this was during the rehearsal process, so I was more so trying to like build that tension and build that like sibling relationship. So what I told them to do was, and at the time I didn't even think of this as like, I call it the Frozen exercise now, which I will use forever until I find a new technique or whatever. But I told them to stand on the opposite sides of the door. So one actor was on one side of the door, and the other one was on the outside of the door, and they did their lines. And I wanted them to pretend like they were like 5 years old. And these were like actors that are like, I think they're like 20. Yeah, I think they're like 20 or maybe 22 or something. But I wanted them to recite those lines away from each other, not looking at each other, you know, they couldn't see each other. And the motive or the goal of the other character, the younger sibling, was to try to like win her sister back, win his sister back. And so like, I put them in this situation to where he wanted to have access to her. So that's what I told him. I was like, your goal is to get access to your sister back. So literally they didn't have any access to each other and the door was locked. So like it was just kind of like this tension building thing where I wanted them to physically put themselves in that situation where they had to try to gain access to each other. And after that, like that was like the take. Like that was the take that I wanted. I wish it was like rolling or something. And we talked about it, and I was like, how did y'all feel about that? And you know, they were like, that was great. And to this day, I call it the Frozen exercise, because that's kind of like what they did, and like that was kind of like the scene from Frozen. Now the actual scene was they were supposed to be setting a dinner table or something, and while they were setting the dinner for like Thanksgiving, they were having this kind of like heated discussion. But it was just like the process that I just fall in love with, the rehearsal process, because it's like you wonder how these people get to these points, like how they reach, you know, those emotions, but you don't know the behind the scenes stuff that goes on to it.
Right.
Like, they could be thinking about somebody that bullied them in third grade for all I know, you know what I mean? So that was just one exercise that I was really like, it just came to me. And like I said, I only had like maybe like 15 to 30 minutes with the script, like with that scene to rehearse with them. And so we had never really rehearsed before. So it was just like genius to me. And I was like, bruh, where did I get this from? I was like, where did I get this from? So it was truly, truly a joy to know that they enjoyed it just as much as I did. And what I also respect is that they trusted me, because they didn't know what they was doing. You know, like, you know, they're actors. They just do what the director tells them, you know? And so it's just like, they were able to trust me. They're like, you want me to go outside and, you know, like on the opposite side of the door, like, and it's locked. Like, what are you doing? So it's just like the fact that I had actors that were able to trust the process. You know how people always say, you know, trust the process when, you know, when things don't look, you know, how it should normally look. They trusted that process. So, it's, and I actually did a similar exercise with one of my most recent actors for my thesis film, but this one was over Zoom. And,
challenging.
Very challenging. So, the character, was like in a really dark, like depressive state, and he was really like grieving. I wanted him to kind of get to that point to where he was just like losing it, like just like really, you know, like in his own head. He was really, you know, just having a fit, like just going nuts. And so, because like he didn't have his lover, so in the movie, like the lover dies. And so I tried to do the same thing where I locked the door and, you know, but, you know, this was just with him. This wasn't with, you know, another scene partner. This was just with him. And so I felt so crazy because I never, you know, really rehearsed with him. This is our first time rehearsing that scene since he was cast. And I told him, we were on Zoom. I said, I have something I want to try, but I just want you to trust me. And I said, you got a closet? He's like, yeah, it's right there. I said, I want you to go in the closet. And I didn't tell him to like lock. Yeah, actually, I told him to like lock himself in there. And so like, cause he had like the lock on the other side. And I know it sounds crazy, but we got the emotion, and he loved it. But he was just saying like wow. He was like that worked. Like, you know, so like I wanted him to stay in that space, because he was supposed to be like really on edge. And so that emotion came from that. Like, he locked himself in the closet. Of course, he was able to like get out, you know, and everything, because the lock was on his end, but he was just like banging on the door. And so we were joking because he has a cat. And so like the cat had never been so concerned. And the cat, and he had like recently just got that cat. And I was like, boy, was your cat trying to save you. So but definitely. I know that sometimes, like, I'm just glad that I have actors that are able to trust me, because that sounds crazy. Like, it really does. Like, just saying it out loud sounds crazy. I even told my dad, and he was like, you're crazy. And so I was just like, you know, like, but it's a technique that works, you know what I mean? Because it was used for, you know, that purpose, because he was supposed to feel, you know, boxed in. And so I don't think the closet was like super small or anything, but it's just like that access. He wanted access to his lover, But he couldn't, you know, he was trapped inside, you know, this in his closet, in his bedroom. So and that wasn't the actual contents of the scene. That was just to clarify, just to just to get those emotions out. And that was just a rehearsal technique. So I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. You know, that
sure.
was just a technique. That was just a technique, you know.
Yeah.
But it did originate from kind of like the frozen exercise. Again, which I wanted to do, but the actress wasn't, you know, where he was, and you know, we were just rehearsing on Zoom and everything. But regardless, I am, I think we all are, like, satisfied with the end result of the film and, like, the take and everything of that scene that we chose to use. So, yeah, just some interesting techniques.
That's cool, because you start to think about, like, you know, David Fincher take, like, does, like, 100 takes in other horror story, well, not horror stories,
yeah.
but, like, other extravagant, like, experiments in rehearsal or in mm-hmm. takes from various angles,
yeah.
you know, people getting hella coverage and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's just the creative process is unique to every yeah. single person.
Yeah.
I think it's cool how you use the physical space,
yeah.
Especially with physical actors, because you're not doing that with Frozen since it's animation.
Right.
It would be interesting to see how that scene was played out maybe in the sound booth with Kristen Bell and the other actress whose name escapes me right now. But it'd be interesting to see how that works when you have something to push against,
right.
to fight with or wrestle with. So
right.
I think that's pretty unique. I can see how the mad genius in you would, like, her eyes would light up, you know, with the possibilities
yeah.
within the confines, within
yeah.
the limitations. And
yeah.
I'm glad you had actors who found you trustworthy, who could go on that little adventure with you, see, like, okay, where's she going to take me with this?
Right.
And even on Zoom at that, too, with that mm-hmm. limitation. Like, that's,
yeah.
wow. So, okay, so would you call yourself an actor's director? Is that, I use the right term, right?
An actor's director. I think so. I mean, I just to clarify, I would never put any person, especially my actors, you know, in any, you know, circumstance I felt was unsafe or whatever.
Absolutely.
But you know, yeah, I mean, I guess what does that really mean? Like, that, does that mean like the director is like really like dedicated to the actor and vice versa? Like, what, I've heard that term, but not really sure exactly what that means.
Yeah, it's, my understanding is, it's what you described, a chemistry
yeah.
with a chemistry and a preoccupation, maybe not preoccupation, but the actors are your priority, as opposed to maybe
yeah.
a director who sees more conceptual things,
oh,
is more
I see.
Concerned with the DP, maybe. Some of my terminology
yeah.
is a little lazy right now.
Yeah,
yeah. Bear with, forgive me. But that's what I take from it.
Yeah.
You sound like a director whose actors appreciate you, who trust you.
Yeah.
And you're thinking about them. Not that you're not thinking about coverage and the camera mm-hmm. and the setting, but like both mm-hmm. stories, you were talking about character.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's what I was thinking. But yes, I really do adore my actors, regardless if they're older or younger than me, they my babies. I have such a strong passion for what I do that sometimes I just look at, like, especially if I write something that I direct, I'm just looking at the page like, wow, I really wrote this. And then, like, don't let me have cast it already. I'm looking at the cast members like, wow, I really brought you into, like, I really created this character. You know what I mean? So, and it's just like, I'm very excited I'm always excited to get to know them. And like still keep in contact with them and just see where they go and just everything. And one thing that I'm really big on is integrity and confidentiality. Like, I never, like, whatever it is that the actor is thinking about, like, I always, you know, like, to get them to that point in the scene, I always
yeah.
disclose, like, you don't have to tell me. Like,
people.
Like, if it was like you got abused or something, like, don't tell, like, keep that to yourself, you know, like, don't, you don't have to tell me. Whatever it is, you know, and if they want to share, you know, sometimes I actually use that to kind of like get them to that point, you know, sometimes. So like, it depends on, you know, like if they disclose that information or whatever, if they just so happen to say, and this is not a real example, but this is just kind of like, you know, just something along the lines of that. But like, if we're just having a conversation, like at lunch or something, and they're like, oh, like I got bullied in like third grade or something. And then like, right, when I'm sure. struggling, when I'm struggling to find a redirect, I'm like, oh my God, what can I do? And I'm like, third grade, little Timmy, you remember him? Let's think about him or whatever.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, and it's not like in a manipulative way, but more so like, you know, kind of just like a way to also to, you know, also to kind of like for them to confide in me, because I'm not like telling other people that. It's just like a just an intimate conversation with just myself and the actor. So I love directing. It's definitely, you know, a joy to always be able to bring stories to life, whether I wrote them or, you know, I didn't write them. I would love to direct something that I have not written, because that's kind of like what I have been doing. But yeah, so that's kind of like my take on directing and kind of like being an actor's director.
Want longer episodes before everyone else? Excited for exclusive VIP content? Or maybe you'd just like to support the show? You're in luck. Josiah's voice on Black filmmaking is now on Patreon. Become a member today at patreon.com/Josiah's voice. This episode of Josiah's Voice podcast is brought to you by Newsly. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural, smooth human voice. It won't be my voice, but no app is perfect, but this one's pretty close. Because for the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. Browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. You can follow any topic as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin, or pop culture and movies. It will find you the latest articles and read them to you aloud. And they have podcasts as well, exploring trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Like this one. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me. That's www.newsly.me. Or from the link in the description. And use my promo code, Josiah Voice, Josiah Voice. I'll put that in the description for you. When you click it, you'll receive a 1 month free premium subscription to Newsly. Stop scrolling. Start listening with Newsly. That is awesome. Any other highlights in set life, PA work, being a director, any challenges you face that you're like, I'm better for having figured this out or seen how it played out, or yeah. or even just an amazing memory where you're like, yo, I will always have that memory. Oh my gosh, I cherish that mm-hmm. as a person and as a creative. Any other mm-hmm. highlights you want to share?
Yes, I have two actually. They both fall up under the same project. So I will start with my thesis film. Still in picture edit for that, but the thesis film follows a young ballet dancer who's grieving the loss of his girlfriend / dance partner. And when he finds out that he has to, that his career is on the line, he has to perform a dance without her for the first time. So a lot of grief, a lot of Black people, a lot of Black
All right now.
Ballet dancers, come on now. But I will just say that this is the project that I'm the most proud of, because it was because of my belief in myself when other people didn't believe in me. Because as you can hear just from the log line, it's, first of all, it's Black ballet dancers. They got to know how to act and dance, and they got to be Black. Oh, forget about it. Like, it's, you know, and so like I was hearing like a lot of discouraging things that was just like people would ask me, like, you still doing your little ballet movie? Or like, you know, you're going to have a hard time with casting, right? And so like going back to like that perspective thing, the whole reason that I was doing the project was because I wanted something that was personal to me, grief, which we've all, which we all have experienced in some shape or form, but I wanted to put it in a more unique and abstract way. And I was like, huh, you know, like the same thought I had about my aunt. Why haven't I ever seen my aunt on TV? I'm like, huh, why haven't I ever seen Black ballet dancers on TV? So now I know nothing about dance, or I didn't know anything about dance. So that was also another challenging moment for me because I had to do more research and everything. But outside of that, the most challenging part was the casting, as you can imagine. So
sure.
So again, like I just got like a lot of, I got like a lot of people who were projecting their fears onto me. And so, man, I actually have a video of it too, but, at our final wrap on the last day at our doors down meeting, I cried like a baby
because
I was, because everything had just came to life. I found my actors. So I found my actors from Atlanta. I needed three Black ballet dancers, and two from were from Atlanta who had actually known each other and who had actually danced with each other before, and who had actually acted as, you know, like a couple before. And I was like, God, what is happening?
Showing
out up in here. So, and then like I found like the third one locally in Tallahassee, but it was just the fact that. Like my faith did get low at times. Like I almost changed the story to something else. I was like, maybe he should just be a photographer. That's easy. No, right. I didn't come to film school for easy. I didn't sign up for this journey for easy. If that's the case, why am I here? So, but it was just the fact that all these people told me no, or told me that I wasn't gonna be able to get it, putting that negative energy out there, and I still kept I still stayed the course. Like one of the things I always say is just that, you know, people project, you know, so it's just like, cause they felt like they couldn't do it. They felt like I could do it. And that wasn't right. So, that has to be my most proudest moment because I was this close to switching it up. I was like, he just gonna be a photographer or something. I don't know. But, but the reason why I was able to, and if you go on my Instagram, the reason why I was able to cast was because I started a casting call on October 30th or October 31st, all the way up until like January or December something. I can't remember. But I posted every single day. I created a flyer. I posted every day. I didn't even post the pictures of myself. I posted every day that casting call, every single day, maybe like three times a day. Like if you go on my Instagram, all you see is like, the casting calls, like further down on my Instagram. And so I did the hashtags. I got people from Africa, people from, one person was like Australia. One person I got a lot of people from New York, but the fact that I was reaching people across the globe, I was like, wow. Now, with our budget, I wasn't able to afford, you know, somebody from Africa.
To fly you out.
I was like, wow. Little old me from Albany, Georgia, you know, reaching somebody from Africa. Like it was just actually really, I even got somebody from London. Like, it was just this abundance of, like, blessings. And but the thing was, you know, we couldn't afford to, you know, fly them out here. So but it was just like my casting call is reaching people. And like I said, I didn't post on Twitter as much, but I post on Instagram for the most part. I use the hashtags. Yeah. But I even got one of the most well-known ballet pages like on Instagram called Blacks in Ballet. They shared my stuff, like they have the little verified thing.
That's,
I didn't
awesome.
Know them. I was just like, oh, you verified, okay. I was like, yeah, it's
I know, that's right.
I was like, it's reaching somebody. But all of that to say that this is a huge highlight for me because I believed in myself, and I never really like believed in myself as much as I did just now for this film, because even though I did have that doubt, it's like, it's similar to what, what's her name? Kelly Edwards in the book that you read, When she said about, like, you can have about 5 minutes of, oh, you know, whatever, you know,
me.
Doubting. Yeah, woe is me, doubting yourself. But I had to get back up because I was like, I still got a movie to make. So either I'm going to wallow and, oh, I can't find anyone, or I'm going to get out here and do it, you know. So, but I did end up finding, oh, this is going to give me chills right here. So I did end up finding my lead, who is a Black male ballet dancer from Atlanta. Now, one thing that I like to do is I like to do vision boards. I like to just, and I also create a lookbook when I write. So, I create like the visuals for it. And, I have on my like little cork board in my room, like the script, what I'm looking for, shot, storyboard, you know, like little index cards and everything. So on my script, I'm not joking, I'm not lying. On my script, I like to put photos like on the title page of the script. And I just, you know, found like a random photo of this Black male ballet dancer because I use Backstage for casting. So I found like his photo like on Instagram, like on Backstage or something. But he was a really, you know, he's like a really, really popular ballet dancer in Atlanta. And so I was like, if I could get somebody like this, that would be perfect. Perfect. And so I put that photo on my title page. I said, I'm gonna get him. It's like, I'm gonna get him. I was like, and if I don't, you know, I'll find someone. But this is the type of, like, this is basically, the character's name is Quentin. I was like, this is my Quentin. And so I reached out to the person. I was like, well, I'll just reach out to the person. Because they could really be my Quentin. I was like, they could really be my Quentin. So I was like, let me just reach out. I reached out, no response. But that was on Backstage, like the casting site. Then I found them on Instagram and messaged him, and he auditioned. He was it. And so I was like, wow. Okay. So I was like, let me just, you know, make sure that we can afford to bring them up here. You know, let me just.
I know, that's right.
Send in emails and be like, oh, we can't feed you. Sorry, get your own. But you know, so he was casted as Quentin, and I told him
that is amazing.
I told him after the fact, because like we actually like keep in contact, like we talk like every so often now. He's really cool. And I told him, I was like, you know, Akeem, because that's his name, Akeem. I was like, Akeem, I don't want to seem like I'm a stalker or nothing, but I was like, your photo has been on the title page of my script since like I wrote the draft. And,
wow.
And I was just so mind blown at like how I had kind of like just spoken that into existence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of, I know that was like really long winded and everything, but that was just something that I was the most proud of, you know, just the fact that, you know, like I said, people like, and I quote, months before the film was made, are you still making your little ballet movie?
Black
you
folk.
Still making, you still making a little ballet movie? Yeah. Still making it. I mean, I still ain't cast. Like at that time, I was like, I still haven't cast it yet, but you know, I'm still making it.
Right.
You know, my little ballet movie will be out in July with my Black ballet dancers and my Black actors, and yeah.
I know, that's right. Just the pride, just, yeah, go ahead.
Not to brag, but you know, but they was calling it little. So when my little ballet movie get a little Oscar or something, you know.
Hello.
Remember that it was little.
Remember that it was little. Nah. And I love how, like, you got to believe that it's big. Like, in your heart, it was big. You know, I was joking about, because Black people always say little this, little, even when it's a good thing. I don't know, that's just us. But in this case, it was like, nah, y'all, like you said, you're projecting. You think you're trying to help me by giving me perspective or something that I'll fill in, I pretending to be you, like you said. Well, maybe I'll make it more manageable or whatever with a photographer or whatever, right? And is, you know, I mean, we just discovered, you know, Black Misty Copeland yesterday. What, you going to try to populate a movie with Black ballet, but you thought you could do it. And it
Yeah.
had to be, you had to have a big heart and a big imagination to combat that,
Yeah.
and to see it through. And because now, because by the time this episode comes out, your movie would have just graced all the screens by then.
Yeah,
That's what
that's
excites me,
true. That's true.
you know, that perspective. I just had to get, no, yeah, you don't mean to brag, but actually, though, while
Yeah,
you
but
brag,
actually though.
because
But
making a movie is not easy.
yeah, because actually though, no, for real, because I mean it took a lot. And then, you know, the fact that I didn't know anything about dance and I didn't really talk about that, but I was so dedicated to the story because, again, perspective. Like I haven't I've never I was like, I'm inspiring somebody else right now. Like this movie is gonna inspire somebody else because, and even my actor was saying, he was like, this is my first lead role. He was like, and I don't
Yo.
really see black ballet dancers. And you know, and I wanted to portray black male ballet dancers and black men in a different light too, because most times I think when we're presented with black male ballet dancers, like we assume that they're not straight or something. And I wanted this character to have a girlfriend. Like I wanted like it's just like a much bigger purpose than, you know, just creating some movie. Like it's just like I wanted to specifically represent this people, like these people, for this reason and this community. And again, while doing it accurately, so I'll follow up with. I did go to some ballet dance classes. I didn't actually take them.
Research.
Yeah, research. So I went. I tried to go like every other week. I tried to go every week, but I went like every other week. So there's a local ballet dance company here in Tallahassee, and I just went in and I was just like, I'm a film student at Florida State, can I just like sit here and like just observe?
I love
So
it.
just like with us as filmmakers, we have our own language and everything. Child, they were sitting up there speaking French. I was like, no, what? I was like,
Wait,
okay, well
what?
this is
Oh, bruh.
research. This is research. So the name of my film is called Pas de Deux. So it means it's French for a dance for two. And so it's an actual, you know, dance. But yeah, so like they were talking about like all these different terms, like dégagé, and I don't even, I forgot what it means now, or arabesque. And I was like, what is this place? So I was like, what
A whole
is
new
this?
world.
A whole new world. But you know, I was grateful that she let me sit in. And then I also sent my script to an FSU alum who also just so happens to work at a ballet dance company. And so she was
Get
able to
out.
kind of like, yeah, so she was able to kind of like look at my script and, you know, she knows like what the terms mean while also using that with her ballet knowledge. So she would tell me like, hey, you might want to change this term because that's not really what it means. Or you might want to actually say this, you know what I mean? Or like, so fusing story with actual like research, you know, with ballet terms and everything. So I was grateful for her as well. Her thesis was actually also a dance film. It wasn't ballet, but it was another like dance film. So yeah, that's all I'll kind of say about that one. But I did have something that I wanted to share about how this experience on set, because that was in pre-production, but on set, how I became, I would say, a better director. I'm always striving to be the best version of myself,
Absolutely.
and admittedly, because I'm a huge advocate for integrity. Admittedly, there was a moment on set where I was not the best version of me. But that version of me kind of like turned me into the version I am today, if that makes sense. But my script had a lot of challenges, and we were the very first to shoot. So just so you can kind of get a picture of the thesis cycle and how a thesis schedule is made. There are 16 films that are made in the spring. So someone else was first, and I was second, but we shot at the same time. So basically, I was first. So I set like the bar for the rest of the rest of the films or whatever. But I had a lot of challenges. And prior to shooting, we have a scheduled meeting with our faculty members. So they will say, hey, this is out of scope, or like, hey, logistically, how are you going to do this? Or, you know, whatever. So I had sunset scenes. So, you know, when I wrote it, I just thought it was going to look pretty. That's all I cared about. I didn't think about how the crew was going to do it. I didn't think about what lights they was. I didn't think about nothing. Okay. I was just thinking about the story. Yeah. And so faculty tried to tell me, they was like, you have, initially I had two sunset scenes and then I took it out, but I can be stubborn sometimes. Like I said, I don't have any problem, you know, admitting when I'm wrong or admitting, you know, when I should have listened, because I should have. But it was like, oh, well, you have like two sunset scenes. I was like, okay, I'll just take out one. And that scene was like 30 seconds long. And the other one was like, the other one was like a minute.
So that's like, hilarious.
Take off the 30 second one. They're like, hello, you still have a problem. How you gonna do the sunset scene? I was like, oh, well, okay. Like, you know, y'all being overdramatic. Like, I'm not one of those directors. Like, they was like, oh, but your crew, like, they're going to go through so much. They're going to be so tired. I was like, it's going to be fine. Josiah was not fine. it was not fine. Literally. Yeah, it was not. So of course, like, as you probably know, like, with sunset. Now, this was an exterior shot during January. Cold. Exterior sunset shot. The whole scene was sunset. So I tried to compromise. So I was like, okay, maybe we can just fake it as morning. So our call time was like 8 a.m. or something. And my DP she went off. She like in a good way. She's like she got that lighting good. She actually used like other lights to fake sunset. And so, but all day we were chasing the sun. All day. Now it looks gorgeous, but all day we were chasing the sun. And when it was getting closer to like sunset, like the real sunset, the crew was hustling and bustling. And it wasn't safe. And so only when things started to become unsafe, unfortunately, that's when my mind was like, they told me so. You know what I mean? They told me so. And so it was just like, you know, they like of course, you know, you want to work hard on set, but there's a difference between like, you know, overworking, you know what I mean? And so
gotta work smarter, not harder.
Yeah. And so like I was just like, I had to think. I was like, I felt so bad because I was like, I'm the one that wrote it, you know. And I was like, and then I got a warning from faculty. And then even one of my best friends, who was actually, she was the production designer for my set, we're really close. And she's, her name is Vicky. I mentioned her earlier on the podcast, but she even told me, and I love a friend that ain't afraid to tell you the truth. And she was like, you got to do something. She's like, you got to cut this scene or you got to do something because we can't. She was like, it's going to be too much on the crew. And so she was like, either cut the scene or change the context or whatever, but you got to do something. And so I think that day, like people were like rushing, running with equipment. And I feel like, to me, I feel like if you're going to run with the equipment, the shot ain't worth it. The shot ain't worth it. You know what I mean? And so it's just like, you know, luckily, thank God nobody got hurt, but it was just like, I felt responsible, you know, and especially because faculty had already told me that this was the problem we were going to run into. And so I felt so bad, Josiah. And so I just, that day, like it was going to look so beautiful. It was going to look so beautiful. And it does look so beautiful. But there was a whole nother scene after that too. So like a nice exterior. So it wasn't like a really long scene. And actually it was more like, it was supposed to fit into a montage. But I said, you know what? I told my first AD, I said, we're cutting the shot after this. I said, I can't watch this. I was like, I don't even feel comfortable directing anymore. If the crew, you know, if they're running and, you know, they fall in or, you know, whatever, and somebody could get hurt. I said, I don't feel like I was on the verge of tears. I was like, this doesn't feel like filmmaking.
Wow.
This does not feel like filmmaking. And I'm like, if somebody has to run to get a shot that I thought was so luxurious, no, ma'am, we don't need it. We don't need it. Because I would hate, this is a, you know, like, this is the type of stuff that people go on strike for. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's the type of stuff people go on strike for. And I'm not going to be one of those people. Okay. Go on strike on somebody else.
No, that's
somebody else's film set. And so, yeah, and so the grip and electric department, I always have respect for the grip and electric department. They went through so much to get that sunset shot. And so, and just the crew in general, I told him, I said, we cutting it. I didn't even tell my DP. She's like, oh, we're moving on. I said, no, ma'am, we're cutting it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I said, you know, I could have even cut it in pre-production, but I was so stubborn. I didn't want to cut it. I thought it added so much to the story. And I was like, no. I would rather have a crew that makes this film alive and healthy than the opposite. So we cut that scene. And after that was over, we wrapped like maybe 3 hours early because I said, I can't take it anymore. So I said, I'm going to cut this scene and we're going to go home early. That's what we're going to do. And so
you have to cut your losses sometimes.
Yeah, and so, you know, I mean, I can't say that it was easy to make that decision, but it was also not easy watching my crew struggle.
Right.
And
you know.
So I went home, and I just had a come to Jesus moment. So, and so my first AD was like, it was like, because we always have like these meetings after each day to see how we can improve, and we were just like, I said, tonight I will go home. And it was actually, the next day was like the off day or whatever. So we had some time. But I said, tonight I'm going to go and look at the setup schedule. I'm going to see what we can cut, how many shots we can cut, how to simplify it. And I didn't even consult with anyone. I didn't consult my DP. I just made the changes. And I was just like, 5 shots. That's it. We're going home. Or whatever. I'm like, well, like, what's
executive decision?
What's essential? You know, like, we don't need this dolly shot, girl. If you don't pull the slider, or if you don't, or whatever, if you don't put it on a tripod or something, you know. So I'm just like, now, like, I was able to do that while still keeping in mind my vision. You know what I mean? So everything that I cut, like, it wasn't like detrimental to the story. Like, oh, like, we could have used that or whatever. So it was just really a moment where I was also the most proud of myself, because a lot of people will not own up to their mistakes, or will give 100% the next day because of pride or whatever. But I am fortunate enough that I feel like I'm self-aware enough to do that and to make those decisions. And the next day I apologized to the crew and I was like, you know, I know that day was a hard day. And, you know, that wasn't my intention. And I was like, faculty told me to. I was like, your director was just too stubborn to listen. But, you know, just me being that vulnerable with the crew. And, and the crew is made up of first year students and second year students. So I wanted the first year students to learn from my mistake. Like, I didn't have no shame. I didn't have no shame in admitting it. I was just like, I just want y'all to learn from me. Because what I did, that wasn't right. So as a result of how everything went on that day in post, because I'm in post right now, or on break from post, I decided not to put the scene in the movie. Because I was like, that day was so awful. And it looks gorgeous. It looks gorgeous. And I hate that, you know, that it didn't get in the movie. But first of all, you know, people, we were in unsafe conditions. And I didn't want to put that in the movie. If it wasn't as glamorous behind the camera, it don't need to be on the screen. That's how I feel. And like the experience, I mean, if the experience was not as glamorous on camera, I don't think it needs to be on the screen. And also, I found that it wasn't even helping my story that much anyway. Like I was.
That's
like,
key.
I was like, well, I wasn't gonna put it in here because of the circumstances, but I was like, you know what? Nah, I can cut it. I was like, I can cut it. And again, it wasn't easy because it was so gorgeous. And I really just wanted to put it in the movie because it was so gorgeous. Story comes first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Crew and story. But I'm glad that I'm so glad that I was able to just kind of take that as a learning lesson, because that has been one of the most humbling experiences for me. Because, you know, I feel like sometimes we get so caught up in story and we get so caught up in these shots that we want to just, you know, we want to do a dolly shot. We want to do this shot from shots from Do the Right Thing, and we want to do this and that. But is your crew safe? Let's talk about that. You know, is your crew safe? Are they getting
right?
Is this fulfilling their needs or whatever? So that's all I really wanted to say about that, because that's another highlight that I feel turned me into or has molded me into the director that I am, and why I will always continue to make movies, because I care so much about like the crew and everything. The crew is everything. So, and at the end, like during our final meeting, our final wrap meeting, I gave everybody gifts. I'm a giver. I gave everybody
gifts.
That's
nice.
You know, and so just to kind of show that, like, yeah, I made a mistake, but at least I know it. You know, at least I
right.
came back and I was like, you know, I'm sorry, guys. And, you know, and they were pretty accepting of that. So that's all I could really asked for, and I couldn't have asked for a better crew because they worked so hard. But that day was just, it wasn't worth all those shots, you know, that we were trying to get. That's... I was like, yeah, it's beautiful, but y'all gonna be carrying equipment and falling, and you know,
no, we can't.
And... yeah,
expensive but heavy. I'm sure you've heard that term. Usually it's for cameras, but there's a lot of expensive but heavy equipment on all film sets. And I like what you said for the first years as well. Like, you wanted to, when it was all coming, it's some of it's fallen apart, but in your mind, it's coming together of being decisive. I like how you put the crew, and especially the first years ahead, because you were like, I want them to see this example, because they're just going to be in the same position one day, like really soon. Mm-hmm. So.
Exactly. And I even, because we have like class meetings after each film has been finished. And I told faculty, I said, this is something that I want to bring up, because if I as a director are having these challenges or whatever, I know everybody else is. So I spoke on it at the meeting, and I was just like, you know, this is just a heads up, like learn from me. I was like, we get so caught up in our stories and our shots, our luxurious shots and all that stuff, but just remember to keep the people who are making your dream, your vision come to life, keep them in mind too, you know what I mean? So I had said that at the meeting and everything, so I hope that kind of resonated with some of the other directors, because I was like, that's important to know. And you know, I was the first film to go,
right?
So, and I was
like, the president,
I was like, child, we got 14 more films to go. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of like enlighten them with that, just my experience. So, but that was very long-winded also, but that was my highlight.
No, that was an amazing story, because it also reminded me of our writing conversation earlier. And mm-hmm. You've learned this, but I've definitely, as more of a writer myself than a director, I've definitely heard what I'm sure you've heard of, like learning to trim the fat and make executive decisions, be decisive.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing with filming scenes, with knowing, is that character necessary? When you're in post, cutting out a scene you've already filmed to the point that you made, seeing that it's like, it's not pushing the story, because, you know, it could be a beautiful sunset or a beautiful, you know, or an amazing car chase or whatever. And it is a movie, and you want people to see beautiful action-packed stuff. But if there's an overlap of like visual, aesthetically pleasing and like valuable to the story, you have that overlap, then you're golden. But if like it's only got one or the other, depending on how it falls into the rest of the film, sometimes you got to make those tough decisions. And so I'm good for you being able to see that it's like, yeah, it's beautiful, but it's not pushing the story further. Like, the writing and the other scenes and the other characters, like all that's, it sounds like you're saying those things came together to make the story tighter and richer. And actually this scene isn't necessary. And That's good that you felt that you could, leave that on the cutting room floor, because some people, that's a hard lesson, either in the writing process or the directing. And I do hope that in the long run that that has a good that has a positive impact on those first years, like you said. And you'll never forget this, being, as Kendrick would say, sit down, be humble, apologize to the crew,
Exactly.
get a little perspective, and now you're better for it. You know what I'm saying? Do you have, say, one other film book that's helped you on your journey that you think people should check out?
I would say Directing Actors by Judith Weston. That's a really
Nice.
good book. I will also say, oh, well, you said one. Can I throw another one in there?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, no,
Okay.
go for it.
Okay.
By all means.
So my mentor, her name is she was actually a director on Black-ish, Princess
Really?
Monique Films.
Yes, I've heard of her. That's
So
awesome.
she has
That's
a book
wonderful.
called From Hood to Hollywood, that I'm reading. I'm almost done with it, and it just like she just talks about like her journey, but it's like she has a chapter, and then like she has like a journal part where she asks you questions or just a moment to
That's cool.
reflect, you know. And so so I'm grateful for her also and her book and everything, because I feel like she's given like all the gems, like dropping all the knowledge on us. So and I feel like she like reading her book, because she goes from her titles, or the titles of the chapters are like pre-production, production, and post, if that means, like in stages of her life. So like just seeing her
I love that.
pre-production part, it reminds me of myself, now, because I'm not sure how old she is, but I'm in my early 20s. But it's just like I feel like that's the type of knowledge that's gonna help me along the way. So I would definitely recommend that book also. So it's called From Hood to Hollywood, and then another book called Directing Actors by Judith Weston.
Awesome, guys. Go check those out because I'm about to add them to my list. Like, I'm in a good place with film books. Right now, at the time of this interview, I just you referenced it earlier, The Executive Chair by Kelly Edwards. Amazing book for filmmakers, especially writers like herself. Also reading Will Smith's memoir right now, and at the same time, I'm reading Transitions by the director Pete Chapman, who's good friends with Kenya Barris and has also directed episodes of Blackish. When I picked up his Pete's book, I was like, he looks familiar. Why does he? Because Amazon recommended it after I finished Kelly Edwards' book. I was like, he looks familiar. Why does he? And then I read Kenya Barris did the foreword, and then Pete talked more, about Blackish. And I was like, yo, I think I even told Pete, I thought I was I think I spoke to him once. I think I told him like his jacket was fly or something, because he's got a really cool style. But his book, at the time of recording this, I'm three chapters in. He's just seems like a really gentle but confident guy who really just wants to draw that out of you and hopes that you like hope it's almost like he sees his book as hopefully a mirror for the reader, so as that they can pick up on
Nice.
their own confidence, be innovative, think on their feet, find their niche. So, you know what? You guys check out Caitlin's books, and if you want to check out the ones I just referenced, do that. I will include those in the show notes. Caitlin, this has been great. I just got two more questions for you.
No problem, no problem.
Why is cinema so powerful to you? Why do you love it so much? And where can people follow you online, follow your career?
So I'll start with the short one first. As far as like where you can follow my career, as of right now, at the time that we're recording, Instagram is the place. I am working on getting my website up, but my Instagram for now is at I am complicated. That's spelled I am complicated. I am complicated. Nice little
Love it.
pun.
Yeah.
And then as far as what I feel like is so captivating about cinema, is just that art in general, when you create art in general, it's just the fact that it's gonna live on even after you're gone. You know what I mean? Like I could make something and like, you know, years and years, and like it can still hold that same weight, or I would hope it still holds that same weight. You know what I mean? Like John Singleton been deceased how many years? Like 2, 3 years or something, 4 years maybe? And Poetic yeah. Justice is still my favorite. You know, like his yes. like the classics and everything. So for yeah. me, I think that's one of the main things that I find so captivating about cinema. And also just the different ways that people interpret stories or storytelling. You know what I mean? Like yeah. like I was telling you, like I like to read the script and then I like to watch the movie.
Right.
So I just got done finished reading King Richard. So just seeing, cause I actually started watching King Richard last night. So just watching it, I'm just like, either like in my mind, like I'm like, dog, this was exactly how I imagined it. Or, I didn't expect it to look like that. You know, nothing wrong with it, but it's just like, I would have taken a different direction. So it's interesting to see how this director took that direction went on that route or whatever. And then I also think just the people involved in the process, like people who are non-film set people, non-filmmakers,
right?
They will watch a movie for an hour and they don't even realize it took about 13 of them just to get made over right. a course of months. And so it's just mm-hmm. like a process, and each process is unique, from pre-production to production to post. And I want to reference what me and you had talked about the podcast with Ava DuVernay, and she was talking about how post is her favorite, because that's where the story really comes to life. You know, if I fell asleep on set, you know, that will never happen because I love directing too much, but if, you know, if I fell asleep and somebody just handed me the footage, you know, if somebody just handed her the footage or whatever, it was like, hey, here's what we got, make this story, you know. And so I think that it's just amazing to see all of the different elements. And people just think, you know, or at least I know I thought, I'm not gonna lie, before I came to film school, like I know that there was some process, but I didn't know what. But especially when I was younger, I thought films just made themselves. I don't know what I thought, but I definitely didn't think that it was anything like this. But the process is just so unique and so very detailed, and it takes a lot of hard work, you know, to make films. And
yeah, wow. Caitlin, this has been great, guys. All of you follow Caitlin on Instagram. I'll put her information in the show notes and in the episode description. And I think the film industry is going to be, you know, extra blessed to have. I mean, you're already in the industry, but I mean, I get it. You're a student right now, but it's like, I want to like pat you on the back now, because the formative years of your career are super important. But like, after you graduate, it's like the film industry is going to be really blessed to have you, have someone like you in it. And I'm just really appreciative and thankful that you came by to share your stories, share your expertise. I hope all of you who heard her stories just really, I hope you found some overlap, and that you just feel extra motivated to just keep going, especially to her points about, like, you know, the adversity, people who are projecting things. You know, we've all been through that. And I'm just glad you didn't quit, Caitlin. Just glad you didn't quit. So guys, don't quit, okay? If you really are about this, whether you're a director mostly or a writer-director, or you're in sound or whatever, don't quit, okay? So Caitlin, you got a big heart for film, and I think it's great. Thank you for stopping by. Guys, go follow her, and I hope you enjoyed this talk. And if you did, stay tuned for more episodes coming soon. Until then, we'll talk to you later. Thanks again, Caitlin.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed that episode, I invite you to subscribe on your favorite listening app. To keep up with the show, you can follow me on Twitter at JosiahDOCX and on Instagram at Josiah's Voice Pod. And if you like my theme music, it's called Brewer B by Mateo. The link is in the description. Thanks again, and talk to you later.